Thank you. Thank you, Jake, for calling everyone together. Good morning, and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. In the spirit of today's service on building bridges across boundaries to honor our shared humanity and common values, please turn and greet your neighbors boldly. This is one of the best parts. It's always hard to bring it to a close. I briefly call your attention to the announcements and the order of service, and we can light the chalice. As we gather to celebrate together, we light the chalice to connect us to other Unitarian Universalist congregations across the country and around the world. For the gift of this day and for our community of spiritual nurture and compassion, we give thanks. We light this chalice as a symbol of our faith. May our many sparks meet and merge in communion of heart and soul. Now please stand as you are able as we sing hymn number 303, We Are the Earth, Upright and Proud. Each Sunday, we set aside time in our service to bring our joys and our sorrows into the embrace of this loving community. If you have a joy or concern, please raise your hand and the microphone will come and find you. Just a sec. You're going to get a microphone.
Last weekend, I turned six, and it was my birthday.
Congratulations.
I'd like to be tell you guys that my brother finally got a job that pays real good money, too. So, yeah.
It is a joy that Harriet Yonke and Ann Marshan have made this two beautiful banners for in front of the church, and we're asking all the members to sign a leaf on this banner. It will be in the narthex after church, and they're beautiful, and they'll be a wonderful addition.
In sharing, joys are amplified and the burdens of concerns are lightened. For those joys and concerns that were shared, and for those that were not, we keep each other in our hearts.
This piece was written as a part of a documentary film about the plight of the orphans, the dozens, hundreds of them, in Kilimanjaro. The composer of the song said that he was especially struck by one boy, 5 years old, who was left at a bus stop by his mother. She told him she would be back and was there for 4 days before joining the group of street children who passed by each day. The words themselves are not terribly important, but they come from the hearts of these children undergoing such difficult times in their lives.
Thank you.
And now, could the children please come to the front to join Marissa for a story?
Good morning. Today, the adults are going to learn about a place in Kenya called the Children and Youth Empowerment Center. And the kids who live there are either orphans or have moms or dads or grandparents who just aren't quite able to take care of them. So they live at this center and go to school there. And so today's story is about another little girl in Africa who, we'll read the story, but what we're learning about happens to kids all over the world in any country, even here in Manhattan. So I want you guys to keep that in mind when we read this story. It's Beatrice's Goat. If you were to visit the small African village of Kasinga in the rolling hills of western Uganda, and if you were to take a left at the crossroads and follow a narrow dirt path between two tall banana groves, you would come to the home of a girl named Beatrice. Beatrice lives here with her mother and five younger brothers and sisters in a sturdy mud house with a fine steel roof. The house is new, so is the shiny blue wooden furniture inside. In fact, many things are new to Beatrice and her family lately. And it's all because of a goat named Mugisa. Beatrice loves everything about Mugisa, the feel of her coarse brown and white coat, the way her chin hairs curl just so, and how Mugisa gently teases her by butting her knobby horns against Beatrice's hand. But there is one reason why Beatrice loves Mugisa most of all. Here's Mugisa. So in the time before Mugisa, Beatrice spent her days helping her mom hoe and plant fields. She also helped take care of her little brothers and sisters. And she was not able to go to school. Her family did not have enough money to send her to school to pay for her uniform and her books. So whenever Beatrice was out taking care of her little sister, walking along, she often passed by the schoolhouse and saw the kids out studying, and she dreamt about being a school child herself, being able to learn how to read and write and do math. One day, when Beatrice was busy working, her mom came to her and said, "Beatrice, some very kind people have given us a lucky gift. We're going to get a goat, and it's going to be your job to help take care of the goat. And I promise if you do a really good job, good things will happen." So Beatrice and her mom worked hard building a shed and planting stiff elephant grass along the edges of their cassava field so that she could feed the goat with the elephant grass. And finally, the goat arrived. And the goat also was pregnant, and she had two little babies. They named the baby goats Expected and the second one Surprise. And every day, Beatrice took good care of the goat, Mugisa, making sure she had plenty to eat and drink. And then when the baby goats no longer needed it, they started milking Mugisa and selling the goat's milk in the market. And Beatrice got to keep the money. So here Beatrice is collecting the milk and going out to the corner on the road to sell to passerbys. And she got more and more money, and she figured the money would be used to buy a new shirt for her little brother or a warm blanket for the bed she shared with her sister. But one day when Beatrice returned from selling the milk and she gave her mom all the money that she had, her mom said, "Guess what? I have a surprise for you. We now have enough money that you can go to school." And Beatrice was so surprised, she said, "I thought we were going to get clothes for our little brothers and sisters." And her mom said, no, it's more important that you go to school. So the next week, Beatrice got to go to school. Her friend, Bunane, also wanted to go to school. And Beatrice told him, guess what? I heard that your family is going to get a goat too, so pretty soon you'll be able to go to school with me. And it was all because of a goat named Mugisa. Right? Thanks. In 1990, my sister Janelle Larson and Mary Hale were selected as Rhodes Scholars from K-State, and that's where this story begins. While in Oxford, my sister became really good friends with the Rhodes Scholar from Kenya named Paul Mina. In 2008 in Kenya, after the election, there was a lot of ethnic strife, and Janelle hadn't talked to Paul in several years, so she was concerned, tracked him down, and found out that he was okay. But in the years since they had lost touch, he had started a center for street children. And he was in fear of having to shut the center down. And so she was like, well, how much money will it take to keep it going? And he said, a couple hundred dollars will keep us going for several months. So she gathered, sent him some money, got some friends together, sent him enough money to keep the center going for, 6 months to a year. And then said, he's doing a great thing here. We can do more to help. My sister is a professor at Penn State in ag economics. And so she got Penn State involved with the center, and she contacted Mary Hale Toller, who's director of the leadership studies here at K-State, and got K-State students involved as well. So what started out as a small center has grown with Paul's direction, he's an amazing man, to a wonderful center that is serving 150 youth who live there, as well as youth and young adults who drop in. And it's all because Kenya has a severe problem with street children. There's no hard statistic, but more than 100,000 kids in Kenya are estimated to be homeless or living on the street, possibly 40,000 homeless just in Nairobi. They aren't all orphans. Some have parents that are just not able to take care of them. And the causes of this are extreme poverty, AIDS, and ethnic conflicts. So at the center, it serves many roles. They are a live-in center for the children. They also provide a primary school and help the secondary education students get their uniforms and tuition that they need in order to go to secondary school. In Kenya, primary school is free, but you have to pay for secondary school. They have the residential program. They have an education program. They have a life skills training program where they teach the children health and financial wellness and leadership skills. And they have a program that my fellow presenter, Caitlin, can explain more, called the Zawadi Shop, where the kids earn points and for good behavior and other things, and then they're able to go and shop in the store to purchase what they want. And it's a way of teaching them saving and budgeting and other life skills. They have a medical clinic on the site. And one of the things that I find most interesting about the program is it's tackling the issue of poverty and homelessness and making sure that these kids who were on the street and then were taken into the center don't end up back on the street, which often happens because Kenya has a very high unemployment rate. So they have a youth enterprises program and an eco-village program for the older youth. And they're working with a lot with Penn State and the K-State students on these, teaching these young adults and youth how to do small business and empowering them this way so that when they outgrow the center and are ready to go out on their own, they actually have a business to go out to, and they don't end up back in poverty and back on the street. And then the eco-villages, one of the things they're doing is, again, so that these youth will have a place to live, they're developing two sites that are going to be ecologically sustainable villages where these young adults will go to live. They can run their businesses from there. And they also envision that the people living in the eco-villages will then reach out to the greater community, teaching them environmental issues, working with them on environmental ways to improve their gardens and such, and also with small business. So not only is the center empowering these youth to help themselves, they're empowering them to go then back out into the community and empower others. And I can't, unfortunately, I have never been able to visit the center yet. And so I think you'll get a sense of this much better from someone who has spent time there. So I'd like to introduce Caitlin Long. She's a student at K-State and went to the Center for Children and Youth Empowerment Center, which we shorten as CYEC, and spent some time there. So I'll let Caitlin come up and tell you about that.
Well, my name's Caitlin. I am a senior in entrepreneurship at Kansas State right now. I'm minoring in leadership studies, and Marissa and I are connected kind of in a funny way. I actually met Janelle, her sister, in Kenya. Had never met her in the United States, but when my team first got there, she was one of the first people to greet us. So got to meet Janelle at the CYEC and then got connected to Marissa once I was back in Manhattan and doing some work with K-State Foundation. So it really is a small world and funny how everything comes full circle. But I wanted to spend some time, Marissa invited me to talk to you all and kind of share my story with the CYEC and how it has really impacted me and shaped my college career and definitely my future endeavors as I prepare to graduate. So the first time I was at the CYEC was the summer of 2011. I was there for about 2 months, and I went with a program called International Service Teams at Kansas State. It's a program within leadership studies, and it's been around for about 25 years. The program sends teams of K-Staters abroad to developing countries for the summer months to serve and learn and work alongside the communities and work on community-identified needs. So whatever the community asks for that summer is what our teams work on while they're there. So I was there with 5 K-State students. I went the summer after my freshman year. My parents thought I was crazy, but were supportive in what I wanted to do. Oh, there we go. These are just a few pictures of the CYEC to kind of give you guys an idea of what it looks like. Along the left side are some of the dormitories that the boys live in. So like Marissa said, there's about 150 students there right now, ages about 5 all the way up to 23. So they have a couple of boys' dormitories and a girls' dormitory, and then some of the older youth that are, you know, 19, 22, live in apartments up on the other side of the kind of compound. This is what you see at the CYEC when you walk in. You notice the red dirt. It doesn't come out of anything. So if you ever decide to go to Kenya or Eastern Africa, don't wear white socks. Along the left side are all classrooms that they use for multi-purpose. The CYEC also does a lot of community events. So it's right outside of a town called Nyeri, and Nyeri has a population about the size of Manhattan. And then as it kind of sprawls out, the CYEC is technically in Thunguma. But they invite the community in often. The kids get to show off their great dance moves. They sing. They hold a lot of different church services. And they also have some acrobatics that the kids do, which are very impressive. These little guys can contort their bodies all kinds of crazy ways, and they work really hard. They also have an art program, and the art room is along the back side there. This is the football pitch. Spend a lot of time there. The kids always wanted to play the kids against the Mzungus, which means white person. So you can imagine that we were schooled every time we tried to play with them. The elevation's a little bit higher, too, so we tried to blame it on that, but they are just much better. this is the Shamba, or the garden. The CYEC, as Marissa mentioned, does a lot of community-based business practices, and one of those is agriculture. So they produce skumawiki, which is kale. They do some spinach. They do carrots. And most of this goes straight towards the CYEC and the food that they're cooking for themselves. So the students get breakfast in the morning. They come back from school, and they get lunch, and they're also served supper every day. There's also a greenhouse, which Penn State helps upkeep when their students go in the summer. They grow a lot of tomatoes in there, and I know that those are things that they've been taking to market and have been able to sell to the community as well. So my team, while we were there, did a lot of different things. One of my favorite things was just being able to hang out with the kids on Saturday when they were home from school, but these three nuggets, Maureen is on the left, Nania's in the middle, and Eric is on the right. And they're about 5 to 8 years old in this picture. But what my team's role was when we were there is we were away from the center during the day, which I'll get to, but at night we always got to come home and hang out with the kids. So the kids get home from school at about 5 o'clock. From 5 to 6, they have free time. And by free time, they're usually doing their laundry or cleaning their dorms or making sure that they have everything in order. They eat dinner, and then from about 7 to 9, they have preps, which is time for tutoring. So my teammates and I spent a lot of time in preps trying to tutor, which really was us trying to figure out the math problems, too, when you're doing the surface area of a sphere and you have 4/3 pi and you don't have a calculator like we grew up with. So it's really impressive to watch them work through that and be able to sit through tutoring. The kids are incredibly devoted to their schoolwork. That was something that was one of my biggest takeaways from my time in Kenya is that everyone is extremely focused, extremely driven. They all have their own individual goals and dreams of what they want to do, whether it's becoming a doctor or becoming a fashion designer. It's really impressive, and they're very driven to accomplish those things. So school is the number one focus of all the kids at the center, and they succeed. They're very successful. A lot of the kids at the CYEC, each school kind of releases a placement, so you could be first in your class, second in your class, third in your class, and a lot of the kids at the CYC are in the top three of their class, which is really impressive. This is Diana, who you're not supposed to pick favorites, but we got to be very close throughout the summer when I was there. She's actually 5 years old, and she had been at the center for a year when I got there. She was first found in really poor condition, very malnourished, but is definitely the wild woman at the CYEC, always running around screaming, but always willing to leap into your arms as well, and she's just absolutely incredible. Just a couple other of friends. Beth is in the yellow. she's also kind of crazy, but very fun to be around, and Sweet Anne is up there also. Ruth is the one in the red shirt, and she's also in the picture on the left. Ruth was 12 the first time that I went to the CYEC, and was just the sassiest girl I've ever met in my life. We always had a lot of sassy competitions about who was more sassy and who could shake their head more, and she's absolutely wonderful and is someone who pretends that she doesn't want to be your friend, but once you kind of crack the shell a little bit, is very loving. So this is the work that my team did during the day. Our kind of project for the summer was to help develop a drop-in center for youth that were currently living on the streets to kind of create a transition so that they could eventually come and live at the CYEC. My team was working with a group of about 7 to 8 guys that came on a regular basis, ages 16 to 22, so our peers, essentially. And it was really powerful for me because coming into the summer, I did spring semester preparation on research and learned a little bit of Swahili and, was told that most people that you'll be working with and the kids are learning English in school, so you should be okay. When we get to our project, most of these guys only spoke Kikuyu, which is the tribal language in central Kenya. And so no Swahili, very little English. And the first couple of days I was just like, what am I doing here? You know, I have seemingly had no common ground, had no way to communicate. But as the summer went on, we became very good friends. And I can remember one specific day, during the summer, it's rainy season in Kenya, so it usually rained every morning while we were out and then would clear up in the afternoons, but it rained pretty hard the night before, and we were in the garden planting, and it was super muddy, and the guys started throwing mud everywhere, throwing mud at each other, throwing mud at us, coming at each other with muddy fingers, and that's when I knew that we had gone from two people, you know, serving each other to true friends, and that's what service is to me, is it's a two-way relationship, right? If I'm giving something, I'm getting something back in return. And so working with these guys, Paul is on the right, and then JJ and Kevin on the left, we did agricultural work in the morning. We did a whole field by hand, and then planted some kale and spinach. They started learning about raising rabbits and kind of the skills it took to raise livestock. We had a lot of community members come in because we didn't have that skills or knowledge. We were just the facilitators, which was really interesting. I had an art education major on my team, so we did some different art projects throughout the day, life skills. They did their laundry every day. But halfway through the summer, kind of the CYC staff member that was helping us had found them housing, and so all the guys had a house and were no longer on the streets. And when we would go with them into town, most of them had been living on the streets for 5 to 10 years, and so they knew everyone. So we go into town with them, and JJ is like a local celebrity, right? So he's saying hi to all the market people and introducing us. And so it was a really neat kind of journey, like I said, to go from that to different groups of people who seemingly had nothing in common to being very good friends. There's all of us at the end of the summer. There's a great group of guys. So I came back from the CYC in the fall of 2011, and something that International Service Teams really challenges its students to do is what next? So you had this experience, and it was likely life-changing. Now what are you going to do with it? Because you have this responsibility. And that was something I really struggled with when I came back was, well, what am I going to do? I'm so far away, and I have these relationships, and I miss them, but I'm happy to be home. So I ended up changing my major fall of 2011 and really saw business as a way to empower people from my time at the CYAC. And I had started as an education major thinking I wanted to do international education, realized I didn't have the patience to do it, but God bless the teachers that do. and really saw business as a way to empower people and create sustainable change. So that next spring, so almost a year after I'd been back, I was in a course called Social Entrepreneurship, and it was my first entrepreneurship course, and our task, our main project for the semester was to enter a feasibility competition at K-State. So you create a feasibility plan, give a presentation in front of local entrepreneurs, and if you win, then you can be awarded seed money to start your venture. So I talked to one of my teammates that I had gone with the last summer and said, hey, we should do something for the CYC. You know, I don't know what it is, but I think it'd be really cool. So we were talking about it, and they already had these existing CBO programs. They had the agricultural one, metalwork, carpentry, and they had a tailoring program. And the tailoring program at the time had about 25 girls in it, ages 16 to 19, who were really, really fun to hang out with when I was there. And they were producing these handbags, and volunteers that had been coming from the States and from Europe were always bringing handbags back to the States, selling them to their friends, and then sending a check back to the CYC. Vanna White. So my partner and I, Logan, we decided to formalize that process, and that was going to be our feasibility plan, and got the kinks worked out. We thought, hey, this is pretty feasible. We know all these people, and we like them, and they like us, and so it makes sense that we could do this. Entered the competition and got some seed money to go ahead and start this venture. This is the tailoring room at the CYEC. sewing machines set up. There's always fabric. The girls also do a lot of like hemming and mending of all the kids' school uniforms whenever they get ripped or torn or anything like that. So the girls are extremely talented. That's Damaris on the left and Fatuma on the right. And these are the two women that are still involved in the tailoring program and working with Rafiki Bags, which is the company that Logan and I started. They both want to do fashion design and have a sketchbook of all the clothes that they would want to make. They told me especially Nigerian clothing is like the trend, what is really trendy and what they would really like to be doing in the future. That's me with all the girls. But Rafiki Bags right now is selling in a small store in Washington, Kansas, and then also at Barney's in the Union. Barney's does a program for K-State students that have businesses, and they'll put all their products in the stores and then help do sales tax and all that stuff. So it was really exciting, and I actually got to go back to Kenya last January to do some business development with the girls and going into the marketplace and doing pricing and looking at colors and fabrics and things like that. And it was wonderful, obviously, to see everyone again. So that's kind of been my journey with the CYAC. I hope to go back soon. We actually had a visitor. Chris is he's Kenyan, one of the volunteers that's been with the CYAC from the beginning. And he's actually interning this semester not with Janelle, but at Penn State. He was able to come to K-State a couple of weeks ago to spend some time here. And it was great to be able to reconnect with him because he talked a lot about, obviously they have a lot of international volunteers that come in and either stay for a week or stay for a year, and everyone falls in love with the kids. The kids are so loving. They teach you so much about loving other people and following your dreams and living a life of joy. It's pretty incredible. But the other thing that he really talked about was the importance of the what next. So, yes, you've had the experience, and yes, the kids are great, but nothing's going to get better and nothing's going to happen if you don't take action when you come back to your home community. And it was really refreshing to talk to him a couple of weeks ago and see a familiar Kenyan face here in Manhattan. So that's been my journey with the CYAC. I know Marissa said we would take questions, but thanks again.
Chris stayed with Jake and I while he was here, and his business is making products out of electronic waste because a lot of our electronic waste gets shipped to developing countries, and so they're left to deal with, you know, all of our waste. And so trying to make something positive out of it, they're able to break it down and make it into, you know, like pretty picture frames and candle holders and things like that. So Chris was going around to some of the companies, some of the stores here in Manhattan, and he had a lot of positive feedback, I think, from stores in Aggieville and downtown about selling some of their products. So you might see some more CYEC-made products in Manhattan soon. And another thing I was going to say, another business that seems to be taking off really well at the CYAC is a hay baling business that some of the young men there have put together, and they've been so successful that they've been asked to visit other African countries to teach their business and their business model and how they do it. And that's another thing, too. Paul Mina, who started this center, is being asked to travel all around Kenya and Africa to talk with people about replicating the whole CYAC program because it has been so successful in empowering youth to help themselves and their community. So open it up for questions.
Hi, I'm Jane Pelletier. Are some of the children who are trained at the center, are they reconciled with their poor families after they leave and maybe through helping their families get out of poverty?
The CYAC has like visiting days once or twice a month where they invite community members and family members of the children to come visit. It's really kind of on a child-to-child basis, depending on what the situation is. Some of the kids leave willingly from their families, but a lot of them, it's a case where if they're the oldest child and there's six other kids in the house, mom and dad aren't able to support everyone. So it's kind of a child-to-child basis, at least with my experience.
Is there also a sort of a long-term sustaining part of the program so that when the students leave and they get out on their own and things don't go quite like they hoped, there's some continuing interaction to support them?
That's kind of that's the thinking behind the eco-villages that they're creating. I don't know how many acres they are, but they purchased two large land plots in two different locations, and they actually each of the two locations have kind of a different vegetation, but they are building villages there for the young adults as they age out of the system to go and live in these villages that are near other communities as well. So it's not like they're going to be out in the middle of nowhere, but they'll have a place to live, and they're making the villages environmentally sustainable so that they're easy to maintain and it's not going to take a whole lot of money. They can, you know, basically live off the grid because they're going to be self-sustaining. And they'll still be in touch with the people at the CYEC if they need to. It seems like a lot of the people that get involved that then are older or, you know, go through the process, like Chris, continue to go back and kind of mentor the next group of people coming through. So I do see that is a continuing thing.
The funding for this project, does any of it come from the government, and is this supported by the government, or are there groups fighting such cooperative deals, and where is it all just private money, and is it all from out of the country, or is it from in-country also?
So the Kenyan government started off sponsoring quite a bit of the CYEC. There's a fund called the Street Families Foundation. Paul is very connected to it and sits on that board, and they provided a lot of the initial money. USAID has been involved. The Japanese government funds actually gives money to the CYEC often, but it mostly private.
A lot of it is private as well. So I guess it was 2008 when my sister got reconnected, and it was 2008 or 2009 then that Janelle and Mary and Paul and several others here in the United States formed a 501c3 in the U.S. called the Zawadi Fund International. And Zawadi means gift in Swahili. And so they are basically the foundation that helps support the CYEC with private funds from the U.S. And then we now have the involvement of Penn State and K-State going there as well. And last year the center did get a Peace Corps volunteer for the first time. And having been a former Peace Corps volunteer, the match isn't always great. And this one unfortunately didn't work out real well, but they hope and assume that they'll get another Peace Corps volunteer in the near future, again, to kind of work on the community outreach, small business development aspect.
And I would say too that I think that's one of the challenges that the CYEC faces is that there is no constant and consistent revenue source, and so it is a struggle to keep the lights on at the center. Electricity goes out all the time, so it is definitely one of the big challenges that they face.
And yeah, another one of the challenges, like I said, is the secondary students have to pay their own tuition, so not all of the kids that are old that are eligible to go to secondary school are able to go to secondary school. The center only has enough money to send, you know, a portion of them, and the rest then do the entrepreneurship training. But you might have students that would, you know, really, really want to go to school who are not able to. But again, that's through the Zawadi Fund International, the 501c3 that's here in the U.S. not to make a sales pitch, but they have a great website. You can just see their annual reports, and they have a menu of things that you could do. And I think it was $500 a year you can support. $500 would pay for a secondary student's full year of education, uniform, meals, tuition, books, everything.
I'm interested in the this is Pat Embers. I'm interested in the cultural aspects of the program over there, and in terms, you mentioned something about art education and that there was an art ed person there, and what about like music and I'm also interested in either with the community around there or in some way of the cultural, you know. People, I want to say Aboriginal or some group, ethnic group or whatever that's connected with the school in any way to be with these kids, to share things like that.
Well, you mentioned music, and that is huge at the CYEC. The kids love to dance, and they will take up a dance performance any chance that they get, and they're so good. They like to try and teach me and my team that we're there, and not even close. So they're incredibly talented with dancing. They also do a lot of singing. So that was something that I really loved to do is sing with some of the girls that were there. And there's always music playing. There's always things going on. They do their own church services at the CYEC. And then there's also several local churches that are around. So speaking that aspect of culture. And I wouldn't say that there's a group that comes in, but I would say that as far as ties to the Kikuyu tribe, most of the students there are Kikuyu. There's a few that are Luo and from other areas in Kenya, but I would say it's very much a part of who they are still. So while there's not an outside group that comes in, it's kind of internally within each of the students that are there, if that answers your question.
And drums, are those involved with the music and the dancing?
Yes.
Because I have a strong interest in that, and I think that's healing, really, for them.
Yeah, I would agree. They, their faces light up whenever they're singing or dancing, so it's pretty neat to watch them perform. Yeah.
You mentioned early on that you had some language difficulties, communication difficulties. I'd like to know more about that, and if there's some kind of emphasis on learning English or a common language, and if you have ESL centers, English as a second language?
So in primary school, the students learn, so when you're brought up by your family, you learn your tribal language first. When you get to primary school, you start learning Swahili and English concurrently. So I only speak one language, so I can't imagine trying to learn two at one time. So they learn both of those at the same time. So all of the students that have been through primary school have great English schools, but if you've, if you're 18 and you've been living on the streets for 10 years, then you kind of missed that. So that's why some of the older youth that we were working with when we were there only spoke Kikuyu because they had never gone to school.
In many parts of Africa, there are struggles involving Christians and Muslims. And I'm assuming that at least some parts of Kenya are dealing with this. How about, is that an issue at CYC in that part of the country?
It's not an issue there's a bit of an issue, but Nyeri is about 2 hours outside of Nairobi, so very central Kenya. If you go to Mombasa or on the coast of Kenya, it becomes kind of a bigger issue. There's a much bigger Muslim population there, but there is a mosque in Nyeri, but it was never an issue between any of the students. There were only a handful of Muslim students at the CYC when I was there, but I never saw any conflict with it.
Hi. Could you speak to the staff? Who are they? Are they local or are they international? Thank you.
The staff is all local right now. So Bernard is kind of the head honcho of the CYC. Paul is the visionary, but Paul isn't there on a day-to-day basis. He does a lot of the administrative and fundraising work in Nairobi and around Africa now, as Marissa mentioned. So Bernard is kind of the head honcho at the center, and he was actually a youth when the center first started. So he stayed around now as really the go-to guy. Gladwell Anagwe actually just got married to Bernard a couple months ago, but she runs the Zawadi shop and also helps with the community business organization, the CBO at the CYC. Issa Adam is also Kenyan, and he is in charge of all the education, so making sure all the kids are in primary school, placed in secondary school, that all of that's going well. And those are kind of like the three the go-to people at the center right now. There are several others who are there kind of in and out, but staffing is definitely limited, and so it's a tough job to take, but also the people who are doing it do it really well. So.
One next follow-up to that.
Yeah.
The classrooms, there are, you have like 5-year-olds with up to 12-year-olds in one classroom, like it used to be here in the United States?
No, they have different classes for different grades, so... Okay. I will say that, you know, if you're 10 and you just started primary school, that there's a chance you could be in a class with 6-year-olds, but that's because that's the level that you're at. But they do have, like, different classes for different rooms for different grade levels. Yeah.
What are some of the environmental challenges that both the country and the school face?
Well, lack of water, and I think that would be the big one. So a lot of what they're doing with their agriculture is like drip irrigation, you know, being able to make the most with the least amount of water.
I would say another really big issue is just trash, which sounds silly, but there's no... there's no regulated trash system there. So along the roads, it's just piles of trash, and in the ditches, it's just piles of trash. And they try and burn everything, which also is an issue. So that I think that and obviously the water. Luckily, in Nyeri, it's actually a place where a lot of governmental officials come from. So this is... two-sided coin, I guess, but because there are so many governmental elected officials from the Nyeri area, the water system is good, so you can drink the water when you're there, and it's clean, so that's good for Nyeri and for the CYC, but on a larger scale, not great.
I'm Mark Clark. I wonder what the connection to Washington, Kansas is and how you end up selling Rafiki bags there, of all places.
Yeah. My partner is from Washington, so he just had a personal connection and knew that they'd be willing to sell for us. Yeah.
My favorite topic lately is desalination. With all the water in the Indian Ocean, which I'm sure spills into the Atlantic and the Pacific, and I know it's expensive to desalinate, but Israel and Saudi Arabia are desalinating. And what's more expensive is not being able to grow food. And if you can grow food, you can accumulate the funds for the trash collection and a lot of other things. I do not understand this cultural lag that we have, that we can't look at water as the most essential thing in our lives.
Hi, this is Sarah Lott. I've spent a little bit of time in Kenya as well, and one of the things that really contributes to the water problem is deforestation, especially in the highlands in Kenya. That has been a major water source, as the water drips down into the forests and then it collects, and that has fed a lot of the rivers in Kenya. That problem is probably one of the largest for water. Desalination is a little bit harder for them because their coastline is not nearly as large as some of the other countries. So, yeah, my 2 cents.
Tom Phillips, I agree. Water is something, and infrastructure in general. So it sounds like there's this town of 50,000 close by, and presumably there's roads. You mentioned some roads with trash and such. But so towards empowerment, and if you've got the 20-somethings working on a farm producing products, do they have a market that they can get to with those? And we hear about in developing countries how cell phones, I mean, most of the world has jumped from having no power lines or telephone poles, as we used to call them, to cell phones. Is that there? And have other entrepreneurs taken off with those? Maybe not your people, but so, or something, anything to get the market beyond Washington, Kansas. I mean, somewhere in between. And anything. How much rainfall a year is another question, but that's not quite related.
I have to Google that.
Yeah, and drip irrigation is awesome, but it's expensive sometimes. I mean, yeah.
Well, I can touch on the cell phone piece. Everyone has cell phones. All the youth have cell phones. And you probably know about M-Pesa, which is the first, basically, cell phone transfer of money in Africa. M-Pesa is huge. So if I want to send you 100 shillings, I can just do that on my phone. And that has really taken off in Kenya, and everyone uses it. To talk about the market for the products, the eco-villages, is that what you're talking about? Yeah. Definitely for the one that is taking off first, it's in a town called Othaya, which is very close to Nyeri and just off the main road that would take you into town. To get to town is about 15 to 20 cents. So definitely doable to take public transportation once they had some of their agricultural projects going. And the eco-village in Othaya is extremely green. It's down in a valley right next to a river. And so hopefully once things get going there, it should be very fruitful. They could definitely get into Nyeri. The other eco-village is in a very arid region, and I don't know the details of exactly what they're wanting to do with that eco-village, but the one that they're starting first is pretty fertile. So.
No.
It's not.
Even Mr. Pitts wasn't loud enough, so...
Were those manual sewing machines with the foot pedal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
That's impressive. I have my grandmother's.
Yeah, everything's manual. The hay baling is manual. Again, another plug. If you want to learn more, go to cyec.net, and you can read the annual reports and just kind of go through, and you'll see about the programs. And they have a picture of the baling, and it's, they built a frame, and you stuff the hay in, and you push it up, stuff some more in, push it up some more, and you have the string in there, and you tie it off. Everything's manual.
And what about the laundry? When you mentioned that several times, I wondered if they had any kind of machines or if it's hand done, all hand done.
Yeah.
Thank you both very much. So as there are throughout the world, there are children in our community also who need empowerment and support. If you know of a program in our area that you think other congregation members would like to know about, please contact me and give me some of the information, and I'd like to collect sort of a small database of organizations in the Manhattan area that are also working to empower youth that we might be able to be involved with. Now, if you could stand as you're able, and please join us for hymn number 146, Soon the Day Will Arrive.
I want to say a couple of words about this. This was written fairly recently in Israeli composers, and of course, it is... they remember well the Holocaust, and that's kind of the inspiration for this tune.
Goodbye.
Our time together is finished, but our work is not yet done. May our spirits be renewed and our purpose resolved as we meet the challenges of the week to come. The chalice flame is extinguished until once again ignited by the strength of our communion. Go now in peace. Everybody is welcome to join us in the narthex for coffee and conversation.